You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, welcome in, everybody, to MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition. Sit back. A lot to discuss. The Reds, are they in the wild card hunt? Have the Brewers maybe turned things around? We know the Pirates' pitching and maybe the various looks of pitching they have been a key for them. Cardinals, an emotional weekend. The Cubs and their manager, one of the big stories this week. MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition. Jim, let's see, where do we start? But you know, we're getting at this here toward the middle of the week. You started the week Monday night with a game against a team with the worst record in the league, the Milwaukee Brewers. Cardinals, as many know, the best record in the league. And, of course, that ends up, as everyone would have predicted, Brewers coming off a 17-inning dramatic game the night before. And they beat the Cardinals 1-0. And I guess that's the fun thing about baseball, right, is you know, you just never really know what you're going to get. And from the Cardinals' standpoint, you know, perhaps with the great cushion that they've had this year, not such a tough blow. But sometimes you do concern yourself when you waste such a nice night's pitching again and lose a 1-0 game.
Yeah, and that was Mike Matheny's, you know, kind of his emphasis after that game. You know, I think the biggest takeaway from the game, I mean, certainly not a favorable outcome, but the way Jaime Garcia pitched and continues to pitch is certainly a boost to this Cardinals rotation. We've talked for the last several weeks about some of the rotation issues they have and the lack of depth that this organization now has in that area with Adam Wainwright out for the season. But, I mean, Jaime Garcia had the stuff to pitch 9 innings last night. A situation dictated that he come out a little bit earlier than that. But certainly, I mean, if he continues to stay healthy and he continues to look like that, have the sinker working, got a lot of ground balls, that is a big, big boost for the Cardinals as they look for starting pitching help. So, yeah, again, not the outcome they would have liked, but I think on the periphery, certainly good signs moving forward from Jaime.
Yeah, well, you know, and that was coming off a really emotional day and a great pitching performance, too, by Carlos Martinez on Sunday. And that Sunday game, to me, Jen, it looked like kind of almost a draining emotional day, not just for Carlos, but, you know, for some of the other guys on the team as well.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, the Cardinals have honored and observed and, you know, recognized Oscar Tavares' memory, you know, at a certain point over the last several months. You know, it was a part of winter warm-up in January when the team all got together. It was obviously a focus in spring training at different points. Opening day, they had a ceremony for him. The thing that was really special about Sunday was it was as much for the family as anybody else. You know, his parents never got to see him play at Busch Stadium. So the Cardinals brought in the Tavares family, both his mother and father, and then two of his brothers, played a tribute, kind of a highlight video of his career again to give them an opportunity to see some of the highlights that they had never gotten to see, you know, except for on TV, presented them with books. And then just, you know, by coincidence, Carlos Martinez, who, as we all know, is wearing number 18 in Oscar's honor, was making the start. So, you know, Mike Matheny was very candid before the start that he didn't know how Carlos was going to react to this. You know, this is a kid who has had trouble controlling his emotions before under much less, you know, serious circumstances. So was he going to channel that emotion and do really well, or was it going to kind of derail him? Well, we saw him probably pitch the best performance of his young career. So, you know, certainly an emotional day. He admitted afterwards that he was crying in the bullpen as he warmed up in the video of Oscar Tavares played above him. But he was able to get those emotions together and make what Mike Matheny described as a benchmark start. And, you know, to top it off, Johnny Peralta, who was probably Oscar Tavares' second closest teammate, drives in all 3 runs on the day. So just a special day for the Tavares family and certainly for the Cardinals. So you're right when you say emotionally draining, because that's what it was for everybody involved.
Yeah, and Carlos, you know, to your point, I mean, he said he had to look away eventually from the presentation up on the big screen and even wondered to himself if he could go out there and pitch, if he was just going to be too sad, too emotional.
Yeah, I mean, he said he was so sad in the bullpen, he didn't know if he could do it. And then at some point in that walk between the bullpen and the dugout, he was able to kind of get everything in check and say, you know, I'm going to do this for my best friend. And, you know, that's a message actually he verbally told to some of his teammates. So you give the kid credit. I mean, he's had to grow up a lot since last October dealing with life, you know, and then also trying to find his fit on this team and in this rotation. But the way he responded to that, I think, answered a lot of questions. And then, you know, certainly you look at the stretch that he's had beyond even just Sunday. This is three straight scoreless starts from him. So, you know, some of that early blip he had in May, where people began to wonder if he was really ready to be a starter and pitch every 5 days, that's really been washed away by what he's done recently.
You know, and you mentioned Johnny Peralta drove in the three runs, and you know, he was very close as well to Tavares. What about what he has meant so far in this first half of this team? Because Peralta maybe, you know, I don't know if he's sliding under the radar per se, but this is a guy who may not be getting as much credit as he probably deserves as one of the best shortstops in the National League.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. You know, he plays the game very quietly. You know, and by that I mean you just watch how smooth he is. He's a guy who doesn't seem to have to put a lot of energy into what he does. And so, you know, I think because he quietly is probably the best word that I can use to how he plays, perhaps he's going unnoticed, you know, outside of St. Louis for what he's done. But, you know, not only has the production been there from him to this point, and he's been a very steady defender as well, but he's going to be key to this lineup now that they don't have a cleanup hitter in Matt Adams. Now, you know, with Matt Adams out for the season, with Matt Holliday getting more days off, we saw him sick over the weekend, and the Cardinals are continuing to give him days off regularly to try to keep him sharp. Johnny Peralta is a guy who is going to fit in that number four, and then when Matt Holliday is out, number three spot. And so far, he's filled it very well. So, you know, as you look at how the Cardinals offensively are going to be able to kind of handle Matt Adams' absence, I think Johnny is a big part of that. But, yeah, you look up, he has 8 home runs through the first 2 months of the season, leads the team in RBIs through the first 2 months. You know, and perhaps he is starting to get that recognition last week he was first place among NL All-Stars at the shortstop position. So either Cardinals fans are voting in mass, or he is maybe starting to get some recognition outside St. Louis.
And so what's the deal with Matt Holliday? You know, is this a serious situation, or was it just a couple of days? What are we looking at?
No, it seems like it was just about a 3-day virus. Obviously, he missed the first game in the weekend series against the Dodgers, tried to play the second game, lasted only 4 innings, and then got Sunday off. But the fact that he was back in the lineup Monday, had no issues afterwards, it seems like it was just a virus that had to run its course. That being said, as I mentioned, you know, I think the Cardinals are going to, or I know the Cardinals are going to be liberal with days off for him. I think they have felt that there has been a benefit early this season to unplugging him from time to time. And you also look at the situation with the outfield depth in St. Louis. You know, they essentially have 5 very capable major league outfielders for 3 spots. So that gives them a little more flexibility to pull Matt Holliday out from time to time to hopefully keep him healthy and then keep him sharp and strong through the end of the year.
And the Matt Adams thing, was that a surprise, you know, that the quad was that messed up? They had to have surgery, and he's going to miss 4 months now. Was that surprising news, or how's that being handled?
No, I don't think it was too surprising to the Cardinals. And, you know, you could tell the night that he had the injury, you know, we asked Mike Matheny afterwards about it. I think his words were there's serious concern. And for a team that usually tries to couch injuries as not very serious, the fact that he was willing to kind of use those words in the immediate aftermath told us or kind of indicated that it was going to be serious. You know, the one thing that was a little bit of a surprise to the organization, when they took the MRI the next day, they weren't able to determine whether or not he had completely torn that quadriceps muscle. When they went in to do surgery, they did find out that he had, which is going to put him a little bit longer on the recovery timetable. So, you know, while the Cardinals had initially hoped that maybe he would just miss about 3 months, now it's likely going to be at least 4, which, you know, when you look at the calendar, puts him at the very end of September. So whether or not he's going to be able to contribute in the regular season is very much in question. Even if the Cardinals go to the postseason, you know, what condition is he going to be in to help out there? So, you know, as the Cardinals move forward, they're really planning on having to do so without Matt Adams.
I got to tell you, though, if there's one team that has figured out how to adjust from, you know, injuries and losing key players, and not just this year, but really in recent years, St. Louis Cardinals seem to be that organization.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you look at this year already, they've lost their ace, they've lost their eighth inning setup man, and now they've lost their cleanup hitter, and along the way have had other guys go down for shorter periods of time, and this team keeps chugging along. I mean, they are fortunate in that they had a guy in Mark Reynolds who, you know, has been an everyday first baseman in this league for many years. be able to step up for Matt Adams. We'll see what the production is there. And, you know, if it's not enough, then maybe the Cardinals go looking elsewhere for help. But, you know, when you look at kind of positions across the diamond, if there was a position that the Cardinals had some adequate depth, it was first base. So, yeah, I mean, this team, over the last 5 years, as key players have gone down, somebody else has stepped up, and it's pretty remarkable. And I think it also says a lot about the farm system that this organization has been able to cultivate, that, you know, for the most part, there has been an internal option ready to step up when needed.
Yeah, no doubt. It's awfully impressive, and they continue just to march forward with the best record in the league. And, Jen, always appreciate it. We'll look forward to catching up again on the St. Louis Cardinals next week. Cubs broadcaster Lynn Casper, kind of pinch-hitting this week for Kerry Muscat. Lenny, what's going on, man?
Well, Dave, nice to talk to you. 2 months in, the Cubs 4 over in April, 500 team in May, and they've been able to limit, you know, the bad streaks. And Joe Maddon feels really good about this young club. And, you know, the Cardinals won away with this National League Central Division, but I have a feeling the Cubs and the Pirates are going to hang around for a while.
That's interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, the Cardinals have been so good. They had this best start in their franchise's history, and incidentally, they do have a pretty decent history. And yet, here are the Cubs, and you mentioned, you know, limited some bad things, and you know, managed to mitigate some mistakes here and there. And they're 27-22, only 5 games back, haven't hit stride per se. I would say overall, probably have to be feeling pretty good about where the team is right now.
I don't think there's any question about it. You know, there have been bullpen issues. The defense at times has let the offense down and the pitcher in the ballgame at the time. But, you know, Joe has pounded home the idea that you've got a pretty young ball club, and, you know, these kids are going to get better as the season goes along. And so, you know, Addison Russell's 21 years old. He's not going to turn 22 until next season. The old veterans in terms of position players are guys like Anthony Rizzo and Starlin Castro, and they're only 25. Chris Bryant, Jorge Soler, just kind of dipping their toes into the water. So there are more guys coming along the way here later this season and into next season. I think they feel very good about the core group they have. John Lester has really rebounded from what was a pretty slow start for him this year. Jason Hamill's been just tremendous. Kyle Hendricks has been very good here as of late. So all in all, I do think that everybody here is feeling good about things, and I think Joe Maddon has created a winning culture, a good environment for a young club to kind of grow through these early pains and get to the point where they feel like they're in the race until the end.
Let me ask you about Maddon. You know, guys get labeled all the time, players, manager. He deals with veterans well. He deals with young players well. Is Joe Maddon, is his identity going to be one that he just knew really how to deal with young players? Is that his strength, or is that too limiting on really what he does well?
You know, I don't know if he has a weakness, to be honest with you, Dave. You know, spent about 3 decades in the Angels system. He did just about everything you could do in the minor league system. It was a part of Mike Socha's coaching staff in Anaheim. Talk about coaching trees. It's pretty impressive when you look at Mike Socha's group, guys like Bud Black, Ron Renneke, who unfortunately was fired recently by Milwaukee, but had a good run there early on with the Brewers, Joe with his success in Tampa Bay. I think he's very comfortable in his own skin. He's not afraid to take some of the pressure off in terms of the media stuff. From these kids, we tend to always try to find a face of the franchise, and I think right now it's Joe Maddon, and I think he takes that on, and he just wants his guys to relax and go out and play. The line he used when he got hired, and he's repeated it several times, is never let the pressure exceed the pleasure, and he really tries to create a fun, relaxing, creative atmosphere that's not based on on ritual and routine. They celebrate for 30 minutes after every win like it's Game 7 of the World Series. And they deal with the losses for a half hour. Then they let that stuff go, and they get ready for the next day. And I think these young kids have really taken to his style.
Yeah, he is an interesting cat. Is there anybody that comes to mind when you try to compare guys? Does Joe Maddon remind you, are there elements of Joe Madden's personality that maybe are reminiscent of anybody else you can think of?
That's a really good question. Not really. You know, like I said, I think he just reminds me of somebody who's been around the block a few times, who's not afraid to think outside the box, who's not afraid to be criticized, who loves second-guessing. there aren't too many guys like that in our game, are there? You know, the why questions are ones that he embraces. He rarely gets defensive when people wonder why he made whatever move he made. You know, I will say he reminds me of Lou Piniella in the sense that he's not afraid during a game, especially when he's trailing, to empty his bench and find any way possible to get back into the game. And, you know, there have been times when maybe in extra innings he's been caught a little shorthanded, but that's because he's done everything in his power to claw his way back into the game earlier. I like that. You know, I think too many managers probably not only manage by the book, but manage by conventional wisdom to the point where even if that move doesn't work out, the media after the game really can't criticize him because it's what most managers do. Joe's not built that way, and if he thinks something's going to work, he doesn't care how unorthodox, how unconventional, how bizarre it may seem on the surface. And as a baseball fan who appreciates kind of the counterintuitive, he's been a smorgasbord of fun for us in the broadcast booth, no question about it.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny how a guy like that, though, can draw so much criticism from the rest of the community, right? And people love to, when they criticize Joe Maddon, oh, he thinks he's so smart. Oh, he's going to outsmart me. Oh, he's too cute. He does this, he does that. And I'm sure he embraces that. I'm sure he hears that all of that stuff as well. Is there anything to that? I know that that's a kind of a harsh criticism. But do you ever feel like you see him maybe just going a little too far?
You know, based on my experience with him here in these first 2 months and going back to spring training, I don't think Joe pays much attention to what people are saying about him. He doesn't want to hear the good, and he doesn't want to hear the bad. He just wants to do his thing. And I think the best way I can put it is when the other manager or the rest of baseball is zigging, he's trying to zag. And that's, I think, a theme of what's gone on in baseball the last 15 years, right? You know, the Moneyball era, you know, it went from on-base percentage to defense to platoon splits to fly ball hitters to ground ball pitchers. You know, we have a lot of franchises trying to find that market inefficiency, and I think Joe on a daily basis is trying to find that. And, you know, we had a situation the other day in the bottom of the ninth with runners at first and third, David Ross on a safety squeeze attempt, bunted it foul, and I said on the air, I said, don't think Joe won't try it again, and on the very next pitch, he did it again. So I think the conventional wisdom in that spot is, well, they tried it, they tried to surprise us, and it didn't work, so he won't do it again, and I think that's the moment where he's gonna absolutely do it again. And to go back to your previous question, Dave, I do think there's a lot of Don Zimmer in Joe Maddon with the running game and bunting and things like that. He and Zim were very close. Obviously, Don was a special assistant and was in uniform for the Rays home games, you know, for about a decade. And I do think that he gleaned a lot from Zim in terms of the little strategic maneuvers that you can engineer, you know, the bases loaded, hit and run, that sort of thing that a lot of other managers won't try. So I would say he's pretty heavily influenced by Don Zimmer for sure.
Yeah. That's an interesting comparison, too. You tweeted something the other day about all the one-run games. This team has played 24 one-run games. It's almost half of their games have been decided by a run. It's exciting, though, right? I mean, I know it can be hard-stopping. Might drive fans crazy a little bit every now and then. But, man, it's just got to be an exciting brand of ball.
Yeah, 24 one-run games out of 49. 26 of the 49 have been decided by one or two runs. We had a 5-1 game to start the series in Miami, and it felt like it was 13-1 because every game has been a nail biter. And that's again where obviously you want to have a manager on top of the game. You want to play good defense, and the Cubs have struggled in that area at times. And you know that is definitely a big talking point in that clubhouse that they're really working on the fundamentals, the relentless execution of technique and fundamentals is the line Joe has used. I think he borrowed it from a football coach from years ago. That's how you win close games. If this team is going to be a playoff contender and possibly get to October, you likely are going to play these types of really tight ball games that go to the final at bat or into extra innings. So it can't hurt a young team. You obviously would like to win more than you lose, but you're right. It's come down to bullpens. It's come down to a play made or a play not made. It's come down to a bunt play. It's, you know, a blooper that's caught or not caught. And for what we do for a living, yeah, there's drama right up until the final pitch, and it's been ridiculously entertaining and interesting. But I think some Cub fans would prefer, especially for their heart health, that some of these games ended up being 4 or 5 run decisions instead of one.
Yeah, well, I say the rest of baseball can have them. I love those close ones. Listen, Lenny, I know you're at the front of a 9-game road trip starting in Miami. There's got to be a beach calling right now. We appreciate you taking the time, though, and filling in for Kerry and talking a little Cubs, and hopefully we'll get to do it again before the season's over.
Dave, I would love to do that. Appreciate the time very much. And, yeah, it's going to be a tough trip, Miami, Washington, and Detroit. This is a road-heavy month for the Cubs, so let's see how they respond.
Hey, look, Tom, the Pirates playing great baseball. They really seem to be hitting stride as we break into the month of June. And, you know, on a challenging road trip, they get a split in 4 games in San Diego and then open up with a real nice win in San Francisco on Monday night. But I guess the takeaway is Andrew McCutchen is probably still, as we had this conversation on a Tuesday, he's probably still shaking his head over what could have been for him on Monday night. He got robbed a couple of times.
Yeah, basically he had a 6 RBI game taken away on a couple of great catches by Angel Pagan in center and Hunter Pence in right field. He came up in consecutive at-bats with the bases loaded, one out, and hit 2 drives into the 2 gaps, left center, right center, and both of those guys made fabulous diving catches, especially Pagan's was. You know, I had a real good angle on that whole play. I saw the ball. I saw him coming, going after the ball, and I figured it had no chance to get it because the ball was tailing away from him as it was hit by a right-handed batter. And he kind of turned into Superman. He took flight and caught the ball. And then 2 innings later, Pence, not quite as difficult a catch, still a diving robbery. So essentially, catch got 2 RBIs, no at-bats out of it, 3 sack flies. But it was something remarkable to see back-to-back. And what I got the biggest kick out of on the replay, when he hit the second drive, McCutchen was kind of grinning almost before he left the batter's box because he kind of knew what was coming. And he just kept shaking his head all the way back to the dugout. And hey, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you love it. At least a guy like McCutchen can appreciate it. He's done it to so many other guys. And he's such a great hitter. He has at least the confidence or that track record in the back of his mind knowing, well, look, like you say, things happen and he'll probably get a couple of bloops today that'll drop in for him. That's the way the game, although hitters tell you it never evens out, but I think it kind of does.
It does, it does. And, that's a pretty good example of what makes McCutchen not only a great, productive ball player, but he's one of the best shows in the show. I mean, he's very animated. He doesn't hide his emotions, good or bad, frustrating or, encouraging. I mean, he wears his emotions on the sleeve, and I don't know if it's entertaining to the fans as much as they appreciate getting a real close, regular look at what makes this guy tick. I mean, he's a very entertaining ball player, and obviously very productive one as well.
Yeah, no, he is one of the real greats to watch and play such a challenging position as well, and does it so beautifully.
Once in a while, fans, if they have a chance, like while a game's going on and he's in center field and, the on the road, you got the opposing batter coming up to his walk-up music, take a look at Cutch. A lot of times you kind of dance to that music. He's kind of, grooving out in center field between that bats. It's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, he's a great one. He's a great one, and a leader of a very good team right now. And another guy who's really taken on, I suppose, a leadership role, maybe just
by nothing more than his performance as the youngest pitcher in that starting rotation, a great starting rotation. But Gerrit Cole already with 8 wins and earned run average sub 2. And we've talked a lot the last couple of weeks about A.J. Burnett, how great he's been. And we know Francisco Liriano, what he can do. But Gerrit Cole is just kind of taking the spotlight lately.
Well, yes, he is. I mean, it's a great May-September, duo, if you will. The Burnett, the sage-old veteran, and Gerrit Cole, the relatively new kid on the block. Obviously, at this point in his career, it's totally different kind of pitchers. Cole can be overwhelming, and Burnett is just mystifying. But performance-wise, they've been very dominant, really. I mean, even Burnett with the breaking pitch, he doesn't blow people away as he did 10 years ago, but he just drives them nuts by, bending that curveball below their knees, and they go fishing, chasing. It's kind of interesting, too, because the way the rotation is set up now, they do pitch back-to-back. And in a really ironic sense, because Burnett, when he came up, was an absolute fireballer. He kind of threw the fastball majority of the time. But now, it gives teams, when they face the same teams back-to-back as they are the Giants, it gives that opposing lineup a totally different look, going from Cole's heat to Burnett's breaking pitches, on control. Two right-handers, but opposing lineup get a totally different look at them back to back, and it's really clicked. It's really worked well.
I'm glad you bring that up, though, too, Tom, because to me that's one of those aspects that I'm still waiting for general managers to really acknowledge and try to exploit. Right, in this age where we parse the numbers and find the angles and whatnot, I've always believed that one of the intangibles that doesn't get exploited enough is that different look. And even it was certainly within a game, right? I like a hard throwing lefty and then a sidearm and lefty and a right hander over the top and who's a thumber. And it's nice to have that ability to really give a different look to a team. And I think it presents a greater challenge than people realize, because you can't just take one pitcher in a vacuum. There's all the context of what else hitters are seeing.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't quite agree with you, the fact that aspect's been overlooked. I think that's one reason behind the proliferation of bullpen use, the way bullpens are built and put together. Managers definitely are aware of the advantage of bringing in, let's say, a hard-throwing left-handed reliever after the lineup has looked at a control, command-type right-hander. It does give lineups a different look, and I think that's one of the biggest keys behind what we keep hearing about diminishing offense. All the shifts in the infield have had an awful lot to do with it, but so has not only the fact that after the sixth inning, everybody's looking at a fresh arm out of the bullpen, but the fact that more often than not, it's a look that is totally different than what they had seen the first 3 times up. And that definitely makes, hitting, which is the most difficult thing in sports to begin with, that definitely adds a layer of difficulty. With the Pirates, you don't have too much of that because, GM Neil Huntington as well as Hurdle, they like the big arm in the bullpen. So you don't have any of those finesse pitchers coming in relief, let's say after the hard throw like Cole. But, if you got Jeff Locke going the first 6 innings, and then you get a look at Archimedes Caminero's 99-mile fastball, that's definitely a big shift in, your approach. And that's one of the reasons why Caminero has been effective, the first couple months of this season, because he does often come in. Locke is one of the guys that hasn't been going 7-8 innings. So if he needs help in the middle of the sixth or after the sixth, before the Pirates get to the end of the bullpen, Caminero often is the guy picking him up. And he's a tough guy to handle after you've seen Locke in 85-mile, the two-seamers.
But there is still plenty of confidence in Jeff Locke and what he's doing. I know his numbers don't stand up to the rest of the rotation, but there's
No, there isn't. They have a lot of, and actually, Hurdle used the word patience. We can have a lot of patience with Jeff Log. He's no longer one of your young left-handed prospects. I mean, the guy's 27. He's been on this, in the show, for 4 years. But what is really mystifying about Jeff? I mean, there's really no middle ground on him. He either is lights out, outstanding, or he pitches on the dark side. It's like all bad. Trying to find a secret to what gives you the good Jeff Log a lot more often than the really bad Jeff Log. Is a real challenge, not only to Jeff himself, but pitching coach Ray Searidge and manager Clint Hurdle. But that's one reason why they are being patient with him, because they've seen the upside. I mean, he's gone through stretches where he allows 2-3 hits a game. I mean, and then there's games like the one in San Diego where he gives up 2-3 hits in five minutes.
No, there's plenty there. The former All-Star, so we'll see. Maybe he'll get his form back here pretty soon. Meanwhile, the Pirates keep cruising, Tom, 3 games over .500 as we speak, and trying to make a move in that Central Division. Thanks for the insight this week, Tom. Look forward to talking to you again next week. Adam, this is what I love about baseball. I think this is why baseball, no matter how good or bad your team may be, this is why real baseball fans love the sport. Here you have the team with the worst record in baseball and scuffling, another losing skid, and they have just played, your Milwaukee Brewers have just played two of the most interesting games back-to-back, especially considering the circumstances that we've seen this year, and it's just beautifully entertaining baseball.
Yeah, you don't see 17 innings every day, although when you do, you think it would stand out. I remember the Brewers playing 17 innings back in 2004, and I remember Craig Counsell scoring the winning run in that game, a 1-0 game. But I asked him about it, and he doesn't remember it, which is astonishing to me. And then the Brewers follow up their 17-inning game on Sunday against the D-backs with a 1-0 win over the Cardinals on Monday in St. Louis, with Mike Fiers, who wasn't even supposed to pitch the game but had to because they used Matt Garza in extra innings. And Fiers gives them 6 scoreless, a really big outing. And, Craig Counsell used a good word after the game. He said what Fiers did helped them normalize a little bit. And I'm thinking that's kind of what this team needs in general. They need to get just things calm and kind of back to normal, because that's not the way it's been. They've had these extremes this year, the losing streaks. Some of their key guys, Kyle Loesch, Matt Garza, the veterans, they're supposed to be your steady pitchers. They've been not. ERA's up near 6. Just a rash of injuries. As of Sunday, every opening day position player had missed a game with injury, and it wasn't even June yet. So they've had all these extremes, and I think they'd like to just get things a little normalized, kind of be able to take a deep breath, and then see where they're at as a franchise and what they want to do as this trade deadline advances. So Mike Fiers took them a step closer to that with just a big-time pitching performance on Monday night.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, too, the normalizing, because you think about baseball and those who are in the middle of that grind all year, 162 games, which, by the way, is preceded by a spring training grind of about 30 games. It is one of those where you love consistency, you love predictability, you love the routine and being able just to kind of churn through day by day. And you're right. I mean, it's a good point, and that's why teams struggle sometimes, is they can't normalize. And this team has been so up and down. And you're talking about Flyers performance on Monday, coming off a 17-inning walk-off victory against Arizona. And those two games preceded by what? 6 consecutive losses? I mean, there is nothing close to normal about what this team has done this year.
Well, it just shows you in baseball, you get the boulder rolling, whether it's in a good direction or a bad one, and it is so hard to stop it. And that's what they've had this year. They got off to a terrible start. They lose Jonathan Lucroy, their club MVP last year. They lose all these other guys to the DL early, and they just weren't able to stop it. Now they find themselves in a a terrible position. There was a point on Sunday where they were more games out of first place than they had victories, almost 2 months into the season. It's a bad place to be, obviously. And I think there's a realization. Look, Jonathan Lucroy said this yesterday. I said, when you left the team, you were hoping they could find a hot streak and you come back and help them keep it going. That didn't happen. So how do you look at, how do you get motivated to come back and start playing games again? And he just made the point that, you know, he's not going to just roll over and say whatever. He's going to keep trying to do everything he can do every day to try to win and to be a good professional. And I think that's the individual battle that each of these guys now is facing, is come to the ballpark every day and try to win a baseball game. And it's weird. It's hard to do in this everyday schedule where it's just such a grind mentally and physically, and it is very hard to snap yourself out of something bad. You've seen that many, many times. And frankly, Dave, it goes the other way. When teams are good and they're out of their mind, good things just happen. And it's almost hard to snap those teams out of it in the other direction. So this is a fight right now. This is why the managers make the big bucks. This is why Craig Counsell wanted this job, and you know, if he wanted a challenge, he's definitely getting it.
Yeah, he is. I've always made the claim that it is probably equally as difficult to lose 100 games as it is to win 100 games, because, like you say, you have to have the confluence of so many things go wrong or so many things go right. It's so difficult to hit, you know, those extremes just because of the way baseball is played and that daily nature. But, of course, you guys are seeing a situation right now where you might be, you know, challenging some of those numbers. And what about Jonathan Lucroy, though? I mean, his timing, his return could not have come at a more appropriate time after Martin Maldonado catches 17 innings, walks it off for you. He needed a break. And Lucroy comes back, does a nice job, certainly behind the plate, right? You got to give some credit for the shutout. How did he look at the plate?
The at bats are okay, and that's the hallmark of Jonathan Lucroy, is that he's just going to put on a good at bat for you. He's going to go the other way, and he did those things a little bit yesterday. It was another 0-for, and his numbers are ugly. Before he got hurt, we were talking with him some about the slump at the plate and how he was dealing with that, and he's coming back now to try to fight that. But I think you make the point about contributing to the shutout, and that's true. He's going to help them get the pitching staff going. Martin Maldonado is a really good defensive catcher. I know that because I've watched him for years. I've watched him in spring training. He's really good. He did not play well at all while Jonathan Lucroy was out. The batting average is what it is, but I'm talking defensively, blocking, all the things that a catcher prides themselves in, Maldonado did not do. It was just a bad stint. So Lucroy is going to help them. He's a great pitch framer. He's a great confidence builder for those pitchers. And if they want to get Kyle Loesch and Garza going, number one, because it helps them win games. Number two, because it puts them in a position to decide what they want to do with those guys for the long term. And that means getting them on a streak of good starts. I think Jonathan Lucroy is going to help for that. So even though this team is, you know, not in a good place in the standings, to put it lightly, his return still is a big deal for the organization for the immediate term and for the long term.
Yeah, you mentioned confidence for a pitching staff, right? Because Maldonado, technically, mechanically, good defensive catcher. Although guys can get overexposed, right? Some guys are better in small doses. But confidence is every bit as big a piece of it as whatever they do defensively, right? Guys like certain targets. Guys like certain personalities behind the plate. Is that sort of a differentiator when we talk about Jonathan Lucroy, part of what makes him?
Well, it's something he's good at, but it's also something Martin Maldonado is really good at. And those pitchers love throwing to Maldonado because he gives them this great low target. He's an assertive guy. I mean, again, he's a really good defensive catcher who had a bad 6 weeks at a bad time because he was playing every day. He'll get back in this backup role and he'll probably play well for them defensively going forward because that's who he is. But you're right, confidence is big. And I think you can look at those top two guys in the Brewers rotation right now, Kyle Loesch and Matt Garza, known quantities. Never gone through a stretch this long to start a season like this. And at some point you wonder if it is confidence, and Garza is the great example of it, because he was two starts in his last start, actually, he was very frustrated after the game because he's given up runs, he's given up hits. At that time it was 19 runs, 23 hits over his last three starts. But he was also striking guys out. So the stuff is there, you know, but the results aren't, and that was frustrating him. And you wonder at that point what role confidence plays. And, I mean, look, I don't know. I don't know if anyone really could put their finger exactly on what has gone wrong for Matt Garza to start this season. But I think, you know, you start to look at some of those intangible-type things and you wonder a little bit. So for him to go out in that long 17-inning game, give them five scoreless innings, pick up the win, get out of a jam early in the outing where you got to run out third, one out. He gets out of it, keeps that game alive, gives the Brewers a chance to win. A huge confidence boost. And we'll see whether it translates into his next start. It'll be on Saturday in Minnesota. And it's a big game for him, just to build something, put two good outings together, have something good to feel about.
Well, we shall see. It will be interesting on Saturday to see how that goes. And you know, see what direction this Brewers team takes now. Lucroy back, a couple of exciting wins, and a big, big road trip right now for this club. Adam, always good stuff. Next week we'll check in on the Will Smith foreign substance story as well. Thanks, man. And Mark, I mean, don't look now, but these Cincinnati Reds, they're like the hottest team in baseball. They won four of the last five games. They're hitting the ball. They're pitching. Can we just forget the first, 30 games to 40 games of the year and just move on?
Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way for the Reds. Mm. They would probably love it if that would happen, but as you know, the whole schedule counts, and they will be still working their way back up the standings. They have a little ways to go. Three straight wins over Washington is a good move for them, of course, but a lot more work needs to be done.
Yeah, but, you know, you take those moments when you can. Of course, all this coming on the heels of another horrible losing streak, but they won 4 out of 5, and maybe the thing that sticks out, and you could tell me, it looks to me like they pitched the ball really well in this little stretch in these last five games. Certainly, at least in the wins, holding down the opponent, and that's always a key.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching was good, especially with the three rookie starters and getting three wins. They didn't all get victories, but they all pitched in victories. But I would have to say, honestly, the key for them with offense, they did a lot of things they hadn't done during their, not only their stretch, but really during most of the season. They hit in key situations. They got two out hits. When the other team scored in the top of the inning, they rebounded and scored right away in the bottom of the inning and took a lead. They had add-on runs. They did all these things that they just hadn't done all season, and it, for them, it was really a breath of fresh air, because this is kind of the stuff they've been missing. They showed a little bit of fight, actually a lot of bit of fight, and they showed a lot of energy. And when they were down, they didn't stay down like they did during the losing streak. They picked themselves back up again.
So is it everybody chipping in that regard? Or, I mean, you look at the numbers, you think that Todd Frazier did a lot of the heavy lifting.
He sure did. I mean, he was definitely the player of the week, and by hitting .500, and he went 8-for-12 in the Washington series with three homers. So, two homers. He did really well. Joey Votto had some nice hits during the homestand. Billy Hamilton, down in the ninth spot behind the pitcher, he's had some good games. He's been looking much better. Zach Cozart's had some really, really nice games. So it's definitely been spread around a little bit. Marlon Byrd, although his hitting still down low by the low 200s, had some really key moments. Little stuff like beating out an infield hit and drawing a key walk both times it started, important rallies. So, really good stuff. I mean, right during the homestand or during the series with Washington, they went 12-for-28 with runners in scoring position, which is for the team that's last in the major leagues and hitting in runners in scoring position is a pretty good feat.
Yeah, well, no doubt about it. And I guess the other piece of good news, as we continue to build on this successful stretch this last week,
Is it Johnny Cueto is coming back and he's ready to go in the opener in Philadelphia? No holds barred. We're good to go. Just let it fly.
It's what it looks like. Brian Price, the manager, said he wasn't willing to let him go 130 pitches in 9 innings or anything like that. So don't expect to see that kind of thing. But I think that they're not worried about a normal workload that he would have today. I'm sure he could get over 100 pitches in 7 innings if he has a good game, which unfortunately for him is not a given in Philadelphia. He hasn't had some really good past success here. But he should be okay, and certainly the Reds will welcome him back with open arms.
Of course, it's a different Phillies team that he'll be facing today than he's seen for a great number of those starts, right? I mean, this is a Phillies team that has struggled every bit as much, probably more so than the Reds.
Yeah, they've lost 7 in a row, and they've been a nemesis to the Reds, though, over the years. Of course, like you said, it's a different team. The one person that's going to really stand out is the Wednesday starter, Cole Hamels. They've been 100% owned by him over the years in both regular season and postseason. So we'll see what happens. But this is a big series for them. They can't come out after beating a first-place team and sweeping them. They can't come out and not perform well against a last-place team. This is an opportunity for them to really build on the pluses and they can get a little bit closer to 500, and they can feel pretty good about themselves when they head right back home to start another homestand. It's a really short road trip, so it's an opportunity for them to win a series.
Yeah, I every once in a while I look up in the standings, I see what's happening, and I think, gosh, you know, like this team had just lost 10 of 11 games, and they'd had their struggles and their setbacks along the way prior to that, and yet here they are, 5 games under 500, and, you know, still alive. And I guess every once in a while I look up thinking, well, maybe the Reds will have rolled over, but they haven't. And I say that they're far from doing it, even though they aren't a very difficult division. In a way, this team has shown a lot of resilience.
Well, I think it's a credit to the new wild card system. They're still obviously very much in the wild card race with over 120-something games left. They're only five games out of the second wild card, so that's not a big deal. They have a lot of hay to make to get back and make the Cardinals nervous. They're about 10.5 out behind the Cardinals. So, yeah, the division isn't looking good. The Cardinals are off to a great run, but then again, the Cardinals are going through some injury issues. They just lost one of their key guys, with Adams going down. So this is just a really big stretch. The next month or so is going to really tell a lot about where this team's headed. If they can stay in contention and stay in the hunt for that wild card, they will maybe not be sellers. If they have another stretch like they had before this past week, they could very well become sellers, and guys like Johnny Cueto, Mike Leake, Aroldis Chapman, and others could be trade bait.
If you had to point to one thing, say, like, this is the one guy that really has to get things going for this team to really sustain a run of success, what is it?
That's a good question. I guess if there was one guy they really would like to see take it to another level, and he had that in April, he didn't have it quite as much in May, would be Joey Votto. He had his first home runs in about a month during the last series. He hit 2 in 2 days, and I think they would love to see him ripping some extra base hits and some home runs. That would be good. He really went far into May without an extra base hit. His average is down for his level, down in the 280s, which isn't normal Votto level. And I think if he could pick it up a little bit from that second spot and had Todd Frazier hitting right behind him, driving him in, I think that would be a really good thing for the Reds. And if Jay Bruce can maintain some of the gains he's made in the last half of the month, that would be good too.
Of course, if he continues to take walks after 3 balls,
yeah,
it makes him harder.
That was a good move, huh? On base percentage king figured a way to get everyone napping. That was bizarre because none of us caught that. And certainly the Nationals didn't catch it. And then find out after the game that's what went down.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you love to see stuff like that. You mentioned this is a critical stretch for this team, both for where they are in the standings and where we are at this point of the season. 3 in Philly, but then back home and Philly returns on that next homestand. So it does seem like this is kind of make it or break it, right, as we head into the draft.
Yeah, it would seem like it. It's something that they have an opportunity. They're playing the Padres, and I think then after that, like you said, the Phillies. It's an opportunity to, you know, like you said, you can't, like I said earlier, you cannot undo what happened in the first part of May and, you know, the other part of April and get it all back, but they can have a nice rebound. A lot of teams went through a stinky time. The Twins come immediately to mind and had a horrible start, and look where they are. You look at the Rockies, they kind of caught on. A few other teams can do that. So if you can weather the bad stretch and pick it up again, you can start feeling good about yourself.
Yeah, Giants got off to a slow start. They've turned it back around. There are plenty of examples. So, well, maybe it's the Reds. Maybe they're next, Mark. It's a short trip, 3 in Philly, and then back home. Travel safely, and we'll look forward to talking again early next week.
Sounds great, man. Thank you very much, Dave.
Well, there you go, folks. 10 pounds of feathers in a 5-pound bag. It's another busy week in the National League. MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition.